Bienvenidos to our latest edition of Corazón Bilingüe. Join us as we explore the dynamics of language, culture, and the art of poetry. I'm your host, Brenda Nettles Rojas. Con este programa, exploramos la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura, y la creación poética, sometimes in English y a veces en español. Our program fluctuates between English and Spanish. We are here today with poet, critic, and educator Stephen Schneider. Thank you for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you, Brenda. It's a pleasure to be here.
Stephen is the author of Borderlines, Drawing Border Lives. Now, this is a collaborative project that you and your wife did.
Yes, this is a project that grew out of several portraits that Rivka, my wife, who is an artist, did of people who live and work along the U.S.-Mexico border. And she did those drawings and paintings over the course of several years. And at one point, I decided to write some poems about the artwork. And that's how Borderlines began.
It offers quite a glimpse of life along here in the border, doesn't it?
Yes. There's a cross-section of the culture of the Rio Grande Valley in Borderlines, Drawing Border Lives. The book consists of 25 portraits that Rivka has drawn and 25 of my poems, one in response to each of the drawings. And you'll find in the book street vendors and musicians and vaqueros. And so really, it's a very colorful look at the culture of the border.
Now, you're not originally from the border.
No. In fact, my wife and I are originally from the East Coast. She was born in Philadelphia, and I was born in New Jersey. And we came down here in 2001. I had been teaching at the University of Nebraska and was offered the position of chair of the English department at the University of Texas Pan American. And so for us, it was a very big change. People used to ask me, you know, what's the difference between Nebraska and South Texas? And I would say, oh, about 100 degrees. But, you know, culturally, it was also very different. Nebraska is somewhat of a homogenous culture, although there are ethnic groups in Nebraska. But the Valley was a very big change for us. I had spent some time as a student in Spain and learned Spanish, so I was familiar with the Spanish culture. But as you know, the Valley has its own unique culture.
Right. And so do you think that this project was a way of getting to know the area?
Absolutely. It was our way of engaging with the people and the culture of the Rio Grande Valley and getting to know it. And one of the ways that we got to know it is by taking excursions into northern Mexico. A lot of the drawings in the book are of people that we met in Nuevo Progreso. There are also a lot of drawings of people who we met at the pulgas, the flea markets that are
quite popular here and quite, growing in popularity.
Exactly. And so we were really fascinated with this bicultural, binational region, and it really was our way of getting to know it.
And do you feel that you were enculturated along the process as well?
Yes, to a certain extent, I think we were. We became very enamored of many features of the culture. You know, we're big fans of mariachi music, and there are a couple of mariachi musicians in the book, drawings that Rivka has done and poems that I've written. And now we're here almost 12 years and are, you know, very comfortable with the region.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the writing and the process.
Yeah, the process. That's a good question because people are always interested about the collaborative process between poetry and art, and in our case, between a husband and a wife. When I was a student, an undergraduate at Syracuse University, I'd studied with a poet named W.D. Snodgrass who had written a suite of poems about impressionistic paintings. And I remember hearing him read his work, and I was just so taken by those poems. And knew about this process, which has a classical term. It's called ekphrasis, where a writer, a poet, responds to a work of art. And at some point, you know, I began to take notes and observe and interview the people that Rivka was drawing about, and decided I was going to write a group of poems about her portraits. So, you know, in the case of ekphrasis, the artwork precedes the poem.
Right.
So, you know, these are not illustrations. They're works of art that I responded to. And my wife was very clever because she would strategically place one or two in my office as a reminder that, oh, you need to write this poem, you know? And really, it occurred over the course of several years that we developed this into a book.
And do you have a favorite one in the collection?
Oh, I have, you know, there's many that I like. One of the favorites, I think, of high school students, because I give a lot of readings in high schools, is Vaquero de Veracruz.
Oh, let's listen to that one.
Sure. This is about a vaquero that we met in the Pulga in Mission. He's come over to the United States to find work. It's called Vaquero de Veracruz. It is a long way, vaquero, from the cattle you worked on the ranch outside Veracruz. I see you here in your soft white Stetson hat, shiny leather Western boots, your blue jeans and construction worker shirt, a long way from the chaparral and the saddle horses, a long way from the campfires under the starry Mexican sky. You have come to the valley to lasso a new life on this side of the Rio Grande and work construction for money to send your family back home. You come to the Mercado on Sunday to listen to rancheras played on CDs and dream of riding in the saddle across the land, slowly sold and corralled.
This poem, like several of the others in the collection, speak to the reality of that, the immigrant.
Yeah. Well, as you know, this is a transnational region, and many people pass through here who are looking to improve their circumstances. And like many vaqueros, ranchers, or horsemen, their original occupations are being eviscerated by agribusiness and other economic forces. And so their way of life is disappearing. And so he's come over to South Texas to work construction. And like many immigrants who are here, is sending money back home to his family in Mexico.
One of the things that I enjoyed about the book is all the different stories about the people.
We really wanted to tell their stories through poetry and art. You know, there's a lot of political discourse about immigration, but oftentimes the human side of the story gets missed. And one of the things that reviewers have commented upon about our work is that it really does present the human face of the people of our region, of the Rio Grande Valley,
right.
The human side of immigration. When we were in Iowa City at the University of Iowa, the local newspaper, the Iowa City Press Citizen, wrote an editorial about our book. And they said that Borderlines, Fronteras is a model for the type of cross-cultural understanding and communication that needs to take place to ensure a healthy and comprehensive national debate on immigration issues. And that was very gratifying.
Yeah, because I know you're an activist as well.
Well, I'm an activist in the sense that I'm very involved in community literacy work. I'm a member of the South Texas Literacy Coalition, which is dedicated to improving literacy through book distributions and programs in the Rio Grande Valley. As chair of the English department, I was very active in creating and really founded the new Masters of Fine Arts in Creative Writing.
Which has really taken off.
Thank you. I was very pleased to see that many of our graduates have been interviewed on your show, and several of them are now publishing books. And it's the kind of activity, in terms of activism, mm-hmm. that enriches our culture, and it's so important that the stories and poems of the people of the Valley get told. So it's nice to see that program getting established and having the success that it is. More recently, I've been involved with Festiva, which is our celebration of book and arts at the University of Texas Pan American, which is another way of promoting community culture and literacy.
Right. And I think that's so important because, as you said, it's important for those stories to be told.
Yes, and there are so many interesting stories that people have here along the border. And as you pointed out, our book tells many of these different stories of children who may be on the street selling things because their families cannot afford to send them to go to school, stories of people who have disappeared for one political reason or another. And then there's the stories that are celebratory, the stories of mariachi music and conjunto and the celebration of life along the valley, along the border.
And did you anticipate that it would be received or that it would have that type of impact?
You know, I wasn't quite sure what the reception was going to be, but Rivka and I have been just so delighted by the embrace that we've gotten from the Latino-Latina culture here in Texas. The book was published by Wings Press.
And we want to point out Norma Cantu, Dr. Norma Cantu, wrote the foreword.
Right. Norma Cantu wrote the introduction to the book, and that was very meaningful for us because she's a well-known scholar of the border, a prominent Latina advocate, and she acknowledges that Stephen and Rivka are not from the Valley, but they not only represent but express the beauty of the culture in a very poignant way. The poet laureate now of San Antonio, Carmen Tafoya, also has been extremely supportive. She writes that Borderlines reflects an accuracy of eye and voice that goes beyond mere physical reality and probes the uncompromised elegance of street vendors, beggars, and an angel who likes tacos. So that kind of verification or validation of you, if you will, of our work has been very important to us.
Excellent. Well, we would love to hear another poem from your collection.
Okay. How about if I read For You Disappeared? This is a poem that started out really in response to my wife's drawing of a woman at a mass for the disappeared in Guatemala. And when Margie Agosin was here from Wellesley University during our first festiva, she saw the drawing at the University of Texas Pan American Library. And Margie is a human rights activist and has been for many years in Chile. And she loved the drawing and she actually bought the piece. And the poem began as an account of those disappearances in Latin America. And then I thought to myself, well, how does this fit into a book about the border? And I realized that there were disappearances going on today in Juarez and all across northern Mexico.
Well, even now, along our border.
Right. It's tragic what's happened. So at the end of the poem, there's a references to those disappearances from Juarez. And that allowed me to place it in a book called Borderlines, Growing Border Lives.
Right.
It's called Disappeared. Disappeared into thin air. Disappeared into black night. Disappeared in broad daylight. Disappeared. Disappeared for speaking out. Disappeared for remaining silent. Disappeared for asking questions. Disappeared. Disappeared for wearing a Star of David. Disappeared for wearing a cross. Disappeared for belonging to a union. Disappeared. Disappeared in Chile. Disappeared in Guatemala. Disappeared in El Salvador. Disappeared. Disappeared from family picnics. Disappeared from wives wrapped in shawls. Disappeared from mothers and grandmothers. Disappeared. Disappeared from marketplaces. Disappeared from cafes. Disappeared from nightclubs. Disappeared. Disappeared from the avenues of palm trees. Disappeared from the fields of sugarcane. Disappeared from the rooms of the living. Disappeared. Disappeared from the town square with its fountains. Disappeared from vigils. Disappeared from the candlelit night. Disappeared. Disappeared from Ciudad Juarez. Disappeared from Maquiladores. Disappeared from the face of the earth. Disappeared.
Wow. I like that repetition of the word disappeared because it almost emphasizes that it's continuing and that it's ongoing.
Right. There's a kind of echo effect from the repetition.
That it repeats and it repeats. And to this day, people are disappearing.
Yes. And so this is what we might call a testimonial, in that it gives testimony to this trauma of disappearing, disappearances, for whatever reasons, whether it's the work of right-wing dictatorships or genocide or drug cartels seizing people. And so it speaks out against that phenomenon. And I want to add that this book, Borderlines, is a bilingual book, and all the poems are translated into Spanish, and it's also very powerful in the Spanish version. And the translations were done by Jose Antonio Rodriguez. He did a beautiful job with them. And we wanted a bilingual book because we felt that it would reflect the bilingual nature of the culture of the border.
Okay. Well, you answered the question I was going to ask about the translations.
Uh-huh.
And the decision to include Spanish throughout.
Yes. I think we just decided that very early on that we would have the text be bilingual. And it's turned out to be a very good decision because many of the schools in the Valley and elsewhere are now using the book for English language learners whose mastery of English may not be perfect yet, but who can use the book to develop their English language skills. And also, we have found that many English language speakers like the book because they can improve their Spanish. So it works both ways.
Right. What did you learn along the process? I mean, I know that this helped you become really familiar with the border area and the people. But what about the writing process and that collaborative process?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I've been a writer for many years. I attended the Iowa Writers Workshop. And I learned very early on at Iowa, and even as an undergraduate at Syracuse, that writing takes time. It's work. There's a lot of revision and effort that goes into it. And certainly that was the case with this book. Moreover, there was a little extra pressure because I was working with my wife, and the poems had to live up to the beauty of her artwork. And that was very difficult. And she's one of my best critics. And she can be very tough on me sometimes. And so I had to withstand her scrutiny of the poems. And I managed to get through it. And she oftentimes had some very insightful suggestions to make. It took a long time, over the course of really 3 or 4 or 5 years, to complete the 25 poems that are in the book. I was working as chair of the English department at the time, and that was taking a lot of my time. But the very last poem was called Es una Mentira. It's about a woman in Nuevo Progreso who was telling us about a sign in a store window that says, don't give money to the children. And she says, Es una Mentira. It's a lie, because these children, in fact, are poor and can benefit from some additional money. And the shopkeepers would prefer people traveling into northern Mexico to spend their money in the shops. Anyway, it took me a very long time to write that poem, and it was the last poem that was completed in the book, but one that's been a favorite of many people.
Why don't we go ahead and hear that one?
You want to hear that one?
Yes.
Okay. Well, here's one of the ways in which living in South Texas has affected my work. And that is, I've begun to incorporate some Spanish into my own writing. And you'll find in many of these English language poems some Spanish. And in the case of this particular poem, the refrain line, Es una mentira, it's a lie, is in Spanish in both the English language version and, of course, in the Spanish version. So I've already introduced the poem, and the poem is entitled It's a Lie. The shopkeeper's sign says, don't give money to the children. Es una mentira. Our schools have enough teachers. Es una mentira. Our teachers have enough classrooms. Es una mentira. Our classrooms have enough desks. Es una mentira. Our desks have enough chairs. Es una mentira. The chairs are waiting for the children. Es una mentira. The children should not be begging in the streets. Es una mentira. The streets are full of whores. Es una mentira. The whores wear dresses with pink flowers. Es una mentira. The flowers that I sell feed my family. Es una mentira. My family is not proud. Es una mentira. The proud river separates our two people. Es una mentira. The people would like a fence. Es una mentira. The fence will keep us out. Es una mentira. Outside, the sky is always blue. Es una mentira. Inside, the blue books are full of writing. Es una mentira. The writing is on the wall. Es una mentira. The wall is for all the children. Es una mentira. The children can afford to go to school. Es una mentira. The school is always open. Es una mentira. The open book is always closed. Es una mentira. The closed book is always open. Es una mentira.
Interesting that you say that this is your last poem that was written for the collection, and this is where you bring in the Spanish.
Right, right. I guess by that point I had become Mexicanized.
The enculturation of the project starts to show itself.
Here. Yes, yes. Norma Cantu points out in her introduction that this poem, Eso en Mentira, and the earlier one that I read, Disappeared, are more overtly political poems than the others in the book. And I think that's true in that they take on certain issues in a very kind of direct way. And the repetition of the refrains in each poem, Es una mentira, and Disappeared in the preceding poem, kind of hammer the message across of the concern in Es una mentira with the plight of children and schooling and the whole notion of a border wall and certain issues that are really of importance here are being held up by this woman who's telling us on the streets of Nuevo Progreso, Es una mentira. And if you look at her drawing in the book, you'll see that she's a very proud woman and has a strength in her eyes and a kind of determination. And we were so impressed with the people that we did meet, both in Nuevo Progreso and in the Pulgas, because although many of them are poor, they held themselves with such grace and such dignity and have, you know, aspirations for their lives just like you and I do for our lives. And what we're trying to do through the artwork and the poetry is to capture their humanity.
Right. And it's almost as in the early poems in the book, you're telling the stories of the people, and then with these last two pieces, you're now taking more of a stance.
Yeah, I think that's a nice, that's a good way of putting it. It's a good observation. That we're taking like a position.
Exactly.
You know, in many of the earlier poems, we're relating the stories through the artwork and the poetry of the different people that we met here on the border.
Right. Very interesting. Now, you mentioned that you were writing this when you also had a full-time position. What do you recommend to writers who are struggling with that balancing of their creative writing life with the paying job?
Right. I think, you know, that many writers have to deal with that tension in their lives, sometimes throughout their entire careers and sometimes when they're getting started. But, you know, I tell my students at the university about William Carlos Williams, for example, who was a full-time medical doctor.
Would write on prescription pads.
Exactly. He'd write on prescription pads between appointments or late at night when he would come home after a house call. Doctors still made house calls in those days. You know, I tell them about Wallace Stevens, who was an insurance executive. And, you know, I think with poetry, especially lyrical poetry, one can find moments in the day or periods of time when one can, you know, write a draft of a poem. And that's how I worked on these over the course of several years. So I don't, we need our imaginative space and time for creative gestation. And certainly, you know, I seek that out as much as anyone. But at the same time, there are lots of examples of people who have managed to find creative time and hold down jobs. Another interesting contemporary case would be Ted Kooser, who I knew when I was in Nebraska. Ted Kooser won the Pulitzer Prize back in around 2003 or 4 and became Poet Laureate of the United States. Well, Ted spent most of his life working in insurance in Lincoln, Nebraska. And what he did is he'd get up very early in the morning, every morning, like at 5:30 in the morning, and he'd light a fire and have a cup of tea and write for a couple of hours and then go off to his insurance job. So one of the things that can help is to have a ritual where you set aside time regularly for your writing. And I think that's ideal if you can, if you're disciplined enough to do it.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite writing exercise or one that you recommend? Or?
Well, there's one that I like to use. It's an icebreaker exercise at the beginning of a creative writing class. One of my favorite poets is A.R. Ammons. And Ammons has about four or five poems that begin with the line, "I can tell you what I need is." And then each poem is really an exploration of that impulse. And so at the beginning of classes, my very first exercise is to share those poems with the students and have them write their "I can tell you what I need is" poem. And what it does is it gives them permission to talk about themselves, whether it's frustrations with a supervisor or some fantasy they may have. And it just breaks the ice very nicely.
Something to get them started.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's been a real pleasure. We hope to have you and your wife, Rivka, back on the program sometime so that we can talk about that collaborative process as well. And I know that you have a new project in the work.
Yes, Brenda, we would love to come back and talk with you some more. We're working on a project of mariachi drawings and paintings that Rivka has been doing and poems that I'm writing about the musicians in that series of paintings. So we hope that will be out within the next year or two.
Oh, and maybe we can listen to one.
That'd be delightful.
Thank you.
You are listening to Corazón Bilingüe. We invite you to join us again as we continue our conversation on language, culture, and the art of poetry. Los invitamos que nos acompañen de nuevo, mientras que sigamos explorando la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura y la creación poética. If you would like to hear more, visit us at www.corazonbilingue.com. Gracias por acompañarnos.